I guess I'll just say at the beginning that this is the first of what we hope will be a regular series of conversations between teachers, members of the ICMTA, sharing something about what they love about the work that we do and what it is that inspires us. I'm Andrew Holmes. I'm a Five Rhythms teacher based in the west of England, and I'm here with...
I'm Sue Rickards. I'm a Five Rhythms teacher and an open floor teacher, and I've been supporting Freedom Dance to some degree, as I think you have, Andrew, as well.
Yes, I have, yeah.
Your delight.
So let's start with something big and juicy. Why movement? What is it about movement that drew you or calls you, or why are you a movement teacher?
I think there's two questions there, and for me anyway. So there's why movement and why am I a movement teacher? So the first one, why movement, I think is because I love being outside. I love walking and moving like that, but I've never been much of an exercise person, or, you know, I just like disco dancing way back in the day, that kind of thing. I've never been sporty or anything particular. And so, and life had got a bit sedentary by the time I was 30, not very, because I was still partying every weekend and that, but a bit sedentary. And even hitchhiking is quite sedentary. Just standing there. And then I discovered movement partly as part of a drama and movement therapy course that I was on. And it was like plugging me back into the mains charger. You know, it was like, oh, this is how I'm supposed to feel. Not this kind of perfectly fine, getting on, having a fine life, but this, like, wow, it's good to be alive. I'm really alive, especially when we started working with the emotional field as well. But it was a little bit, you know, like instead of being on the slightly dull sleep mode, which you know, you can do everything with, suddenly going, oh. So it really, the experience of movement, kind of remembering, as soon as I started dancing, remembering, yeah, it strengthened everything. And then why movement teacher? Well, I don't feel like I teach movement. I use movement. I use movement to teach, but I don't teach movement. And some of our colleagues really do, really, really, really do teach. You know, I was at one of Alex Nikiforov's classes once, and as he was breaking stuff down, I thought, you know, this is gorgeous to be taught like this, teaching the actual movement, which I do a little bit, but not much. And I think I became a teacher partly because I went to Dance with Gabrielle thinking, let's see what's all this about. Susanna and Yakov had been talking about her, people were talking about, and I was like, let's go and see what this is about. I was a bit cynical. And during the course of dancing and moving with Gabrielle, lots of people were talking about the possibility of a second training coming up after Susanna and Yakov. I'm like, why would you want to do that? I just want to dance. Teaching is a whole other thing. I knew that from being a movement therapist, that being the therapist and being the therapy are two very different things. So I was like, oh, I wouldn't want to be a teacher. And then something in what Gabrielle was saying hit me. It hit me like I had a physical reaction, as if someone had taken their hand and pushed me in my chest. And the sentence came ready made in my head. Oh, shit. I'm going to have to apply for this training. I didn't want to. I really didn't want to. But I knew, I absolutely knew, I have to apply for this training. Shit. So here I am. And never looked back. Never, never, never looked back. Yeah. I love that thing, that moves us sometimes, and they're so simple that just moves us, life just moves us along. So there we go. What about you, though? I bet yours is a very different story.
Yes, do you know, I used to describe myself as a brain on legs. I managed to get through the first 29 years of my life almost without noticing that I had a body. And, you know, I was one of those people that kind of took in fuel and went to sleep. And I mean, you know, I'm a Taurean. I like the pleasures of the body. I like good food and good sex and all of those things. You're a Taurean too, aren't you?
I am. I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah. but and good walks and, you know, all of that. But I'd never been a dancer, and I'd never really engaged with any of that. And then we were going through a sticky patch in the relationship that I was in at the time, and my partner gave us a 4-day couples workshop. You were there, actually.
I remember now.
With Yakov and Susanna Darling-Khan, who are now the founders and very successful teachers of movement medicine. I think a bit like you, there was something very sort of visceral, very kind of, oh my God, I found something really important. And I was actually so terrified that I didn't go again for about a year. I knew it was really going to be important. So for me personally, movement is just a really good way of balancing all those other qualities that are present in me, like a fine mind and a strong connection with spirit. It just provides a vehicle for bringing all of that down to earth in the here and now, and into the body. I'm often a bit perplexed by the fact that I think what I'm teaching is spiritual practice, but that I'm choosing to do it through the physical rather than through any other means. That's what I would say. And like you, I also had a very strong connection with Gabrielle Roth. Again, also sort of accidental. I was a theatre director when I was first dancing, and I didn't have any particular intention to be a movement teacher, but the rhythms just became more and more compelling, and I had to do something about that. I knew if I didn't, I would. So I went to teach, I think, to try and bring the rhythms back into my work as a theatre director, which worked for a few years, but then eventually they won and I stopped being a director.
I remember being part of that transition, and I'm not entirely sure that you haven't really stopped being a director, I would say. I'm a bit out of date, but that you've changed the field, I think, of directing, you and some other people who are really passionate about the theatre, and then really including movement. I think you've changed the field, so it may not be up on a stage anymore, but a much bigger stage or something like that.
Yeah.
These things happen. Somebody said, which was great, in my class, one of my groups yesterday, we had a bit of a glitch with Zoom and Tractor. And somebody said the thing that they had got the most out of the evening was how me and my team handled the glitch and included everything. So let's hope something like that is true now, since it's already happened.
What's that poem? I think you like it. Forget your perfect offering or something.
Yeah, Leonard Cohen, isn't it? It's something like ring the bells that still can ring. And I love that. It's like, go for what still rings. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. I love it. Yeah, thanks. We've been using poetry a lot in these online Zoomy things. I've been using poetry a lot. It's been part of the delight. For me, it's a little bit like the installation, almost. Kind of opens up a little bridge between one way of thinking and one way of hearing and introduces another. I love it. I'm really loving this opportunity to use poetry as an installation.
Yes, yes. It is interesting, isn't it, how a change of the form invites new creativity.
Unbelievably. Way more than I thought was possible. I'm really appreciating it. The whole time, you know, ever since we stepped onto this field of dancing, Andrew, there's just, I suppose it's true all the time in life. It just makes me more aware of it. I clock it more. I'm less afraid of saying words like love or spirit or God or consciousness. I'm still very wary of using them in some ways, but I'm not afraid of using them. It's just...
That's one of the biggest changes for me, looking back over however long it's been, 25 years or something, is that willingness to name those qualities. And maybe I think it's that if I had talked about that at the beginning, I somehow wasn't embodying it sufficiently to do that with real confidence or authority or genuineness or something. But now it just comes all the time.
And it's not just us. I hope it does. It puts the language squarely back on the map for all of us, whether we're teaching or not. That language, even if you're saying, I disagree, I don't like, or what does this mean? It brings the language back in. Whatever the opposite of impoverishing language is, it's that enriches our shared language. I like that a lot.
While we're looking back for a moment, do you have a memory of Gabrielle that somehow catches what you remember of her?
I'm only, at the moment, I'm only having inappropriate memories, which is quite Gabrielle. No, but if one comes, I'll let you know. But it sounds like you might have, but you've got a much clearer memory than me.
Maybe. But the thing about Gabrielle was everybody met her differently, or she met everyone differently. She had that extraordinary quality of, you could be in a room with 200 dancers. Quite often there were 200 dancers, and yet you felt like she was talking directly and personally just to you. And I think that is sort of somehow true in the way everybody met her. So for some people she was really scary, and for some people she was really this or that or the other. For me, somehow she always felt like a sort of young woman, you know, like a 20-year-old, slightly shy, totally ethereal. Like whenever I hugged her, it was like your arms would just keep going. there was nothing there. Very sweet. The image in my mind is just meeting her on the path at Esalen as I was coming down from accommodation and she was going up from lunch or something, and just a moment in passing of this, this maiden who must have been 55 at the time or something, I don't know.
Yeah, that's really nice. That's really nice. Yeah. I mean, I mean, she was something really, really special, wasn't she? And also really, really ordinary. And I liked that in lots of ways. I remember now I'm having a memory, and I hope this is all right with Kathy and Laurie for me to say this because it involves them. But I remember I was in a some sort of hot tubby place with Kathy and Laurie, and Gabrielle was ill. It wasn't the last illness that she died, but she was very, very ill, and people were quite worried about whether she would recover, and she did. But being in the sauna with Kathy and Laurie and just coming out and them saying, we'd been talking about being concerned about Gabrielle's health and thinking of her and la la la, and then saying, do you know, wouldn't you just wish her to ring it, because she hadn't been well enough to ring or anything, wouldn't you just wish her well enough to ring up, even if all she did was complain about something? The phone rang. It was Gabrielle. Where are you when I need you? Kathy and Laurie were laughing. We did ask for it. And they're just like, Gabrielle, it's really great to hear you back on form. What do you need? You know, and it was really, I love those little things that happen. I love them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Sue, earlier you said, well, I don't teach movement. So what do you teach?
What do I teach? What I like to imagine in this moment, I would probably say something a bit different another time, but in this moment, what I like to think is that I put all my skills into reminding us who we are. And definitely it's that thing of teaching what you need to know. So I think a lot of the time I'm reminding that we can move, that life can move through us, that we can sense things, that we're all right, that we're not walking around wrong in so many ways, that reminding people and myself of the all rightness of life moving through us, and the kind of the beauty of simple honesty, undefended, simple honesty, and how each step we take, whether that's physically or kind of a bit more metaphorically, each step we take lets us see something fresh and new. We don't have to know the future. We only need to give what we can in this moment, take what we need, give what we can, and then we're in another place, and then someone else or something else or a track or the light will shine. And something that wasn't possible one moment ago is suddenly possible this moment. I love this reminding us really how natural we are. You know, we're natural beings. We do a lot of unnatural things, but that we're natural beings. And a lot of that I get from, you know, now Fanny and Colin being my teachers, movement of being, and I would say a lot of it started getting switched back on when I started moving. So that's a kind of teaching. It's more of a suggesting and a reminding, I think, that I do. And then sometimes, especially in my closed groups, I'll bring a specific thing that I want to teach. And because of all our trainings and because of my natural inclination, I don't find it very difficult to think of ways of, well, how could we bring that through the body? How can we really, if I'm teaching, I don't teach very cerebrally. And I have a lot of fun. And if it's not working, people tell me. And then we adjust. And it's very alive. I like it. So occasionally I'll bring something to teach. But mostly I think I'm a reminder and an encourager.
Missive.
I've been in your classes, Andrew. You teach with such care and precision, among other things, but you really do. You're like almost another species when I see you step into that. I love it.
Thank you. Permissive is the word that comes to my mind when you're naming those qualities in you, that place of just saying yes to people, saying yes to people as they are, and that's somehow really encouraging and supportive, allows people to kind of blossom.
I hope so, yeah.
And how do you do it?
Oh, it's from drinking at very good wells. I mean, the stuff I'm doing with Movement of Being with Annie and Colin, it's drinking long drafts of nectar, even when it's challenging, and it sometimes is, you know, and reading and dancing and being in good company. And then I don't seem to need to do so much as see what pours out. I feel like my job is to keep drinking in, and then a bit like a good teapot, the slightest little tip and it will pour out. And I love, you know, for instance, the workshops of fire. We used to do these pre-COVID days, and will again, I hope, working with a fantastic team of people, where we met again, had a sweat lodge in the middle, and the whole thing, we would only have the loosest preparation, lots of it, but the loosest preparation, so that we could go this way or that way. Rachel would read a story, Killian would play some music, Becca would bring a piece of inspiration in, Hilary Holt's the sweat lodge, and none of us, the whole team, knew where we were going. We would, it's such a pleasure. It's total creativity in the moment. So it's a pleasure for me. When people say, oh, I like your teaching, I go, it's a pleasure. It is. Some of the admin in the background and the brain work that it requires, different brain work that it requires, which is more than people think, that I don't find so easy or so pleasurable. It's all right. But the actual stepping onto the dance floor and being with people, or on Zoom, I'm loving that. I do. I feel like, you know, I'm a little teapot. Just tip me a little bit and something will come out, especially if I make sure that I remain reasonably full. A bit harder to get anything out if I'm tired and drained.
And are you the sort of teacher that where things happen in the space just because you've turned up? In the way that Gabrielle was, are you catalytic? Is there something about your presence energetically that allows something to happen in the field, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's true of most of us in different ways. And I think people can sense what you can hold, and they don't ask me to hold more than I can, which is a lot. But for instance, when my mum and dad died years ago, as you well know, but when my mum and dad died, which was a really, really fucking tough time, shortly after that, more and more people were bringing their grief onto the dance floor. And it was always been there, but people can sense what you can handle, I think, and use it at some very, very subtle level that has not anything to do with intention. It's just there. So I think we all catalyze what we can handle, at least touch wood. People don't bring more than I can hold. But they always bring the limits of what I can hold that will stretch. And I love that. That's a privilege.
Mm.
I know you're a catalyst because I've been on your dance floors.
Huh. That's interesting and good to hear. I think of myself as a sort of like a guide.
Mm.
That's my style. There's somewhere beautiful in the mountains that I've been, and I'd like to take you. And in order to get there, the journey has to be really well planned and prepared. We need specific equipment, and we have to keep going in that direction for 3.5 hours. Otherwise, we won't get there and be able to get back in time. That's what my teaching feels like a guided walk in the mountains.
Well, because it's genuine, Andrew, because that's what you're like, isn't it? So I think you're gonna attract mountaineers and Sherpas and campers, and you're going to attract. I remember you and I have done that. Do you remember when we were in Yosemite after one of the trainings? And yes, it was really, really snowy, really so much snow and ice around. And you said, no, we can do this. I'm going, no, what if we fall through the cracks in the ice on the snow? And you said, we probably won't. Come on. Oh, Andrew, wait for me. It's really true. I would have stayed down in the camp around the barbecue singing songs, but I followed you up that mountain. I really did. It was amazing.
Yeah. It was.
That's really true of the way you teach, and I think that's you catalyzing.
But I'm struck by what you say. It's a different way of offering from the well of our own experience, isn't it? It's like all I'm really wanting to do when I teach is actually, I think what I'm increasingly wanting to do, or today's answer anyway, is I'm wanting to help people cut through unnecessary suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like. It feels like over the last 10 years, I've become more and more Buddhist tinged in my teaching. I can't claim to be a practicing Buddhist, but that's what I read a lot of and study and sometimes sit with teachers of. And there's just something about cultivating this enough self-knowledge, enough to drop that particular piece. It's like I love that saying, Susanna used to quote it, know yourself, for find yourself, that's half the way to God, then lose yourself and all the way is trod or completed, or whatever a less difficult English word would be.
Trod sounds lovely because it rhymes.
And increasingly it's the losing that I'm teaching.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
in Five Rhythms terms, it's lyrical and stillness that draw me, rather than chaos, which is what got me hooked in the first place, and flowing that I struggled with for so many years. Staccato that comes very naturally to me.
Yeah.
It's like something about the furthest reaches.
I wonder if it's to do with remember, our ages. Sorry, Andrew, carry on.
To do with our age?
Mm.
Yes, but I remember actually being 20 or, no, not even that, 17, I think, or 18. I was in Australia on my own. I went on a sort of one of those guided trucks around the outback for a week kind of trips to Uluru or AS Rock, as it was called in those days. And I remember we had sort of 2 hours somewhere. And I remember walking as far as I possibly could in the time that was available to get a glimpse down into the next valley over the red sandstone rocks, and then having to run back while everybody on the bus was waiting for me. that sense of just, you know, like wanting to go to the edge and have a look.
I love how I'm kind of, oh yeah, a lot to what you're saying, and you've been nodding sometimes while I'm speaking. I love how different we are and how we're both looking in, pointing in the same direction, and actually how I think all of us do that, dancers, teachers, teacher dance. There's an element of being drawn as well, each in our own very particular way, called, come, move, dance, room, you know. And just as you were saying, I was thinking how glorious that we are so different. One of the things that I really like about Open Floor, for instance, was that it was born of a whole group of people representing an even bigger group of people, pooling everything they knew and then teasing out, well, what's particular to one person, but what's universal to us all, with all our differences, what's universal that will be the ground in a way, and the collective wisdom of that. And I love it, and I love that that's what we're, is one of the reasons I really love being part of the ICMTA, that you would do things one way, I would do it another, someone else would do it another, and then we pour that wisdom, if it is wisdom, help ourselves and each other see blind spots and create something that none of us could do on our own. I'm really enjoying that aspect of us two talking, because we're so different in so many ways, but our hearts are beating to the same drum, I think.
Yes, and you know that sort of sociological experiment that sometimes gets done, where you put a big group of people in a room and ask them to kind of go and stand next to somebody that they feel something, some connection with, and people end up with the people who have the same background or the same story as them, like, you know, they went to the same kind of school, or they suffered the same kind of trauma as a child, or they're second children and they're drawn, you know, we have that very natural thing of being drawn towards the people that are like us. And what I love about the dance is that we're all drawn to the sort of mystery at the center of the circle.
Yeah.
And so you and I, who might never have found ourselves ordinarily, end up sitting side by side and getting to know each other over all these years. And that's beautiful.
Yeah, the amount of people on the dance floors that you would never cross paths with otherwise, that's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember I was in Denmark once, and I said something about, you know, we need to get the politicians on the dance floor, and they turned to me and said, oh, they're here. And a couple of people went, oh, yeah, some quite, you know, big shots. They're here. Just blew my heart wide open. It's like, wow!
What do you think's changed in you over all these years of teaching?
I guess my trust in what we're doing has grown. I'm maybe my trust in myself, but I'm not sure that bit's entirely true, because that's always come and gone. I can go between being full of doubt and full of confidence, and both are true. But maybe with experience, even though I may not like when things don't go according to my ideas or technical hitches, may not like them, but the trust that we're in it together, that I'm not trying to, for instance, save a group or save anyone in a group, that we're in it together, and what we create is what we create, and I have my role and I will give it 100%, but that's still my role, and we're in it together. I think I have more and more, at least on a good day, and there are quite a lot of them, more trust in the whole unfolding. And we do need good teachers. I need good teachers. I really, really, really need to be taught well and know what it feels like to be loved, in my case, and encouraged and challenged in the least harmful, most growthful ways. I need that. Otherwise, I think I really would have put down my laptop many, many years ago. And that there's more. In some ways, I still feel like such a beginner. And I know that's a bit of a cliche, but I really feel it. I feel, wow, look, if I followed you up a mountain, and I go, oh, Andrew, I thought this was the peak. And you go, oh, no, it's just a pass. Look at that. It's a nice question, though. Don't think I would ever ask myself it. Do you think about that?
No, not very often, but I'm aware. I think that's the thing I find hardest to remember as a teacher. I have to consciously do it to remember what it was like to be a beginner on the dance floor. You know, like to to remember, oh God, yes, of course, people may be feeling that or seeing that or thinking that about me, the teacher, or I think the two things that for me I would say have changed, I really resonate with that thing you, my way of saying what you've just said would be, at some point I just stopped worrying about whether I was cool or whether I was doing it well, or in a way just stop bothering about Andrew. That's part of, big part of my whole life's mission, actually. I'm just, I say to my groups from time to time, I'm so bored with being Andrew. I really don't need to insist on that any longer or spend much time contemplating it. You know, like the Andrewness of Andrew is a given, and I'm not, let's not pay any more attention to that. So there's something, and when you said about, you know, about, so yes, it's not that it stops being scary or edgy or sometimes painful or embarrassing or, you know, any of those things. It's just that you just do it anyway. You just learn to hold all those feelings. And Alex Mackay once said, show up, see, and serve. That's the job of the teacher. And I think that's right.
Yeah.
What about on the dance floor? Has that changed? Has your dance floor changed?
Oh God, yeah. And if I'm really honest, right in this moment, I liked it when I was younger and more limber. I can remember really, literally getting someone to lift me up to the rafters so that I could swing with my legs over the rafters and hang upside down as part of the dance, which probably would never pass health and safety anymore. But and just dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing, I would get really tired, but my body would repair itself enough for the next day. If I dance like that now, it takes days to repair. It just does. It just does. So I miss that my body physically at 64 can't do what it did at 34. I think I started dancing when I was about 30, something like that. Having said that, there are times when the subtlety of a movement, will carry me, you know, like a feather on the wind, you know, like the subtlety of a movement, for instance, or a sudden stamp or a thrust when I don't expect it, when I'm not trying, when I'm not, you know, really using a young body to squeeze every drop of experience out of everything. They're precious and I value them more. I might not even have noticed them 20, 30 years ago. And now I go, oh, what was that? Or, you know, boom, ah, like, oh, here we are. I don't have the muscles to do it anymore, but the life force, same. I think I have to appreciate what an older body brings. And it's a loss in many ways, but not an insurmountable loss. It's a loss that leads me into another era, really, another way of being here on the planet in a different kind of body. That is so valuable, so, and I can't think of an exact experience now, but they've been happening recently, I know, so I'm speaking from there.
Yes, it's part of that movement towards stillness that we touched on earlier for me. I feel like I'm a little younger than you, not much, but a little. I feel like, well, I really want to carry on doing this, not just the teaching, but the dancing also for, you know, well, forever, preferably. I sometimes see in my mind's eye those sort of very old ballet mistresses in their 90s with names like Miss Julie or Miss Judy or something, who just sit on a tall chair with a cane and kind of tap the floor and make everybody listen. And I think, well, I could probably do that when I'm 95, if I'm still here. So something about the adventure, I suppose, of learning to dance differently. It feels like, I don't know, you know, like when you work with the emotions and when you're first finding something that you're not very good at expressing or being with or being comfortable with, you have to kind of almost exaggerate and go to the max to get a sense of it. And then gradually it becomes more and more digested or incorporated, embodied. And then you can just a little flavor, just a little whisper is enough. It's like, there it is. So I feel like that about my dance in a way, that I used to have to dance really big and wild to kind of find myself or find that place or something. And now I can just ripple a shoulder and whoop, there we are.
Yeah. Well, that's really beautiful. As you're speaking, I'm remembering, you know, when you go to, I haven't been to Latin America, but you know, when you go to Mediterranean countries, and I was in Portugal years back now, but there was a kind of street festival thingy going on, and everyone was dancing. The kids were running around dancing, dogs were barking. My idea of heaven, dogs were barking, kids were running around, but also dancing. And then the teenagers, which everyone's kind of like, oh, and then they drop out. Well, no, they weren't. They were dancing with each other, la, la, la. Some of them were dancing with older people all the way through to really what people who look to me to be in their 80s or 90s, really moving beautifully. It's a whole different move, but really, really, absolutely as taken by the dance, I imagine, as they ever were. I'm wishing this myself. I think I'm heading there.
Isn't it lovely to talk to one's colleagues about the thing that we love, isn't it? And I can just feel my whole heart and my body is so warmed by spending some time talking about this with you.
You know what, though, Andrew? You're saying that. This wasn't planned, was it? But it's 4 minutes till the next ICMTA meeting that we're on. So we've completely overrun the time we thought we would maybe spend chatting, and I could easily go on for an hour, but we'll be a bit unpopular if we do.
Is there anything you'd like to say
delight it is to kind of reminisce and ramble and not try to say anything in particular, just see what comes up to be said. You know, as you know, I was a bit resistant, it's like, oh, Andrew, really? And now look at me, really enjoying being here chatting with you and hoping it will touch someone or be of benefit. But if it doesn't, I've really enjoyed myself.
Well, me too. Thank you so much.